woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and what back stacking next? I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 37, Dow futures up 112 as we start the month of September. And we've had 7 months in a row of up markets. And
7 months?
Yeah, in a row.
More like 12 years.
Well, we had 1 month, 8 months ago, we were actually down in the month, so we'll see. But now, and I went back and I looked at, hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Doing fine here.
I looked at the Fed balance sheet yesterday, which, since I can't look at the money supply numbers since they don't give them to us anymore, I think this Fed balance sheet thing is going to be the, it's a short-termer. They don't want anybody to know what they're doing. Except the right people. Now, you can't tell me nobody's getting these money supply numbers, but we just aren't. That's the most arrogant thing I think I've ever seen high-end government do, is if people are looking at the numbers, they don't want them to see it, they stop giving out the numbers. Next time we have a downturn, are we going to stop giving labor numbers, Kevin? Or is that too much?
That could happen, yeah. And the only thing that's missing is someone going, nanner, nanner, nanner.
Yeah.
I am
stunned. Little did you, when you give somebody the oath of office, even if they got like 95,000 votes, like Lori Lightfoot, and I keep picking on her, not because her personally, but because of the vote total. All of a sudden, you get to be the person who can handle the truth, and nobody else can. And I'm wondering, is it the actual oath, or is there some...
I think it's in the oath somewhere. You sort of have to read between the lines a little bit, but it's in there. You are the keeper of truth.
It's not like in the
you
underwear.
Handle the truth. Yeah.
Nice job, Minnie. It's not like in some vibrating appendage to your underwear or anything like that. It's not, you know.
Well, they seem to enjoy lying, so perhaps it is.
Well, what was that? You know,
lie again.
Yes, lie again. But I mean, this whole idea that you can't handle this information, you can't handle the COVID information. The parents can't make their own call as to whether they want their kids to wear a mask in the school or not. I mean, it's all of a sudden now somebody has to make this call. And at every place, you grab your best friend who's a doctor who nobody would ever want anybody working on. You make them the chief of medicine for the county or the state or whoever, and all of a sudden they're telling everybody what to do. I just the whole concept of it is somewhat bizarre to me. But but I have a question for you. I was looking at some of the damage down there in Louisiana, and these are somewhat hard decisions. And I don't pretend to be the guy who says what the decision ought to be. But you know, who knows what global warming really is? Who knows if we're having a part of it, who knows if it's because of the fires, too much stuff in the air. I don't know, but it does seem like the weather's getting a little crazier, although if you look back at history, there's always been crazy stuff.
And that's always the thing I remember. We had a cold snap. Yeah, we never had those before.
We never had a drought before, yet we had the Dust Bowl. You know, we had...
We don't do facts very well anymore.
Well, I did read something that made some sense.
It's always I can find data to support my position and spout it. And you know me, I always talk about data versus information and versus real knowledge, and we never get that far, which is problematic. It's a big problem.
You have these weather events, and it's hard to imagine. You know what the cause is. I mean, I don't know how you. One of the biggest. Actually, it's a fascinating read. Although, I don't think you want to go through the chapter about the various and sundry species of rat that made it out of Central Africa with the bubonic plague because it got colder. But there was a. It's a book. It's probably. I don't know. I don't have any of these things like Netflix or anything, but. Are all these like historical and those kinds of things where you know there's a special history channel specials and stuff? Are they all buried in Netflix somewhere if you want to see them, Matty, or not? I have no idea. I mean,
there's a lot of those on Netflix. I don't know if all of them are on Netflix, but there's a lot. Sure.
Well, there was this actually it was a book, and I have the book called Catastrophe, and I mentioned this before. Some dude. talk about people observing stuff. Evidently, who knows if it is like this today, but years ago, evidently, if you were in Britain or someplace, in certain areas, like in Wales, one of the pieces of furniture to have, especially if you want a big coffee table, for lack of a better term, they would take a slice, maybe a 1-inch slice, of some huge tree that went down. And then they'd varnish it up and all that stuff, and take the bark off and work on it, and evidently that was your, you put your drinks on it and so forth, and it was considered very in for a while. You know, who knows when in was, 100 years ago. But anyway, this guy's at somebody's place.
Back when you and I were in.
Yeah, back when we were in. Anyway, this dude is looking at this thing, and he's a tree guy. And he notices that, I don't know much about trees, but I do know that if you slice the thing horizontally, and look at the trunk, you can sort of tell how old it is because every one of the rings is a year, right? Or something like that, you know.
That's what they say.
Yeah, Matty, shut me off if I'm totally wrong here. But anyway, and you can sort of tell if you really know what you're doing with a magnifying glass, kind of the weather that year by the width of the ring. Am I correct here still, Matty? You seem to know more than me. You're from Iowa. What the hell? Of course you do.
I don't know anything about the width of the ring, but I definitely know that the rings each represent a year.
Well, this guy finds a spot where buried is a real old tree, buried in the middle of it. There's these rings that are really, really close together. So he counts back the years, and he's like, well, what the hell? And anyway, he did some research, and he finds out that happened all over the place. And actually, somewhere in the late 400s, 500 era, he deduces that there was some massive weather event that lasted for like quite a while. So he starts digging through whatever literature there is or cave drawings and whatever, and he finds out that virtually every society, I don't know, I don't know what the year was, it was a long, long time ago, but every society had a serious change at the time, whether people used to live inland and then move near the ocean, that kind of thing, in Russia there was a group that was cavalry-oriented, and they used to kick ass on all the people who were agrarian-oriented, all of a sudden the agrarian people kicked ass on those guys. But there was huge changes everywhere, anywhere there was any kind of written languages. What he deduces is that all of a sudden, that there was something must have happened where the world temperature dropped appreciably for like a decade to where you couldn't farm anymore, you had to become hunters. And it's amazingly well-researched. And it actually had to do with the plague reaching Europe because the lower temperatures caused whatever. The bubonic plague was sort of like Ebola. It was stuck in some, wild caves of Africa on the Congo River someplace and never left there. Well, because of the cold weather, the rats in the area went another mile further, and those rats went another mile further, and he traced, like, all these different species of rats to basically they made it to the coast and hopped on boats and made it to Europe. And that's how the plague got to Europe, was rats from Africa during this period caused by this cold weather. So it's not like there haven't been weather events before. The Little Ice Age was when Revolutionary War, right? I mean, there's never ice on the Delaware River. with that period of time. Don't they call it the Little Ice Age, Kevin? I mean, stuff happens.
You know what? I don't know about that. So I'll take your word for it.
And then, I mean, I don't think there's any question. I mean, you can politicize anything, even the weather these days, but I don't think there's any question that things are warmer. Now, whether we caused it or somebody caused it, I don't know, because July was what, the warmest month on record worldwide? Something like 10 of the last 15 warmest months on record were in the last 2 or 3 or something. I read this stuff once in a while, I don't remember the whole detail. But in fact, since the sun is slightly cooling by the year by like a bazillionth of a percent, we actually should be getting a hair cooler, and we're not. So, you know, one of the obvious things is we're causing the warming ourselves by carbon dioxide and those kinds of things. But it's not all that obvious because, I mean, one of these wildfires probably puts more carbon dioxide in the air than all the cars in the world, you know, who knows? Now, of course, did we cause the wildfire? I mean, there's a million reasons why all this stuff can happen, or any kind of a volcanic eruption obviously belches more garbage in the air than we could do in a while. So, but still, these issues do happen. Now, my question is, and boy, talk about a long way of getting there. On the way in this morning, Maddie and I were listening to the radio, and they're interviewing a guy from one of the barrier islands down by New Orleans. And evidently, they've been hit, you know, a bunch of times in the last 15 years, but this is like the worst ever. And the guy's thinking that, you know, half the houses are like ruined, or they got to be rebuilt. And they're talking about a 5-year plan to get the place back together. And my question is, at what point, and this is so damn unpopular, at what point do you say, I'm paying you guys the insurance, but I'm never selling it to you again? This just isn't the right place to live. I don't know. When do you get there? I mean, if you live on the Fox River, how often do you pay out flood insurance before you say move to higher ground, you dummy? I mean,
we do that, and there are they absolutely are already doing the, you know, first of all, you're risk rated, so if you are in a flood area, then your insurance is more expensive.
I
live on water, so there's a premium to the insurance there, but the it's also experience rated, and they will refuse to sell in many cases. If they keep paying claims and they ain't making money, they're either going to jack it up so high or they're going to stop paying. Our problem is we feel sorry for people who make that rational decision, or who maybe irrational decision, but make the decision to live there, and so we have a strong tendency to just go bail them out.
Well, the insurance companies...
with federal money.
And plus, we don't trust them. Insurance company will find a way to not pay anybody. Nobody... Kevin lives next to a nice lake, but are you technically a floodplain?
Not really. I mean, the time that water actually crept up into the yard, we got 11 inches in 2 days of rain.
All right. Well, this is not a Kevin decision. This is on your. If you list the house, you either are or you aren't.
I know what you're talking about. And yeah, I don't. Technically, I think I am not a floodplain.
Because that insurance does not come from the insurance company. That comes from the federal government.
Right.
And it is interesting, since we seem to be getting these 100-year storms. This is a Jen Flanagan question. The floodplain is what, Manny? We had somebody on here who was an expert in this. Is it a 50-year storm or a 25-year storm or something? Puts you, if the creek overflows once in 25 years, it puts you in a floodplain or something. And there's a formula to it, and I just wonder if, with the storms we're having lately, if somebody were to look at the experience of the last 10 years and look at the floodplain maps, which I think were done in the 40s and 50s, if you might get a pretty different view of what the floodplain now looks like. I mean, in Houston, none of that stuff was in a floodplain. Because when they got that 9 inches of rain or 15 inches of rain and all those houses went under, they weren't close to a creek or anything. They just...
The floodplain definition is based on a 100-year floodplain, so that obviously would mean there's a 1% chance of that 100-year flood happening every year.
Okay.
And so that's how they based that being eligible for that federal insurance.
But, Manny, didn't we determine that day, whoever we had on, that the problem comes if you get a flood like in Houston and you're not in a designated floodplain and you don't have flood insurance, you're just screwed. Because your normal insurance policy does not cover you, I don't believe. I mean,
no, it does. It definitely does not. So if my home were to get flooded, my only hope would be that a tree, and my neighbors now have taken down all their trees, was that a tree would fall on the roof and everything in the house would get wet, and I could claim that it was from the tree falling on the roof.
Right. So I don't. Well, that's I mean, that's what happened. My buddy Ron, I won't give his last name, his parents had a, we used to share a spot in the OEX, which is a long story that I won't tell. Anyway, Ronnie's a great guy, and we're still friends to this day. And his parents had a place, is this politically correct, Manny, on the Redneck Riviera, down in Alabama. Where did Kenny Stabler live?
Mississippi.
And they were across the street from the water. I mean, there's a road, and then there's the beach. I mean, but they were real close, and so they evacuated for some hurricane. I think it was right after Katrina. Maybe it was right before Katrina. This thing whacks in there, and the entire what looked like an apartment building or townhome building. The thing is gone. It's just plain gone. The only thing that's left is the slab, right? So, but everybody evacuated, so nobody actually knew what happened. It might have been somebody who had stayed behind, but. The thing is, now what happens to all your stuff? What happens, like, to your underwear and your shaving cream? Is it just upstream somewhere? I mean, in somebody's yard? I mean, what happens to everything? These are stupid questions that always come to my feeble mind. Anyway, everything's gone.
There's someone wandering around with underwear that has your name tag.
I mean, it's not just the place. I mean, people have, like, a serious amount of stuff at every place. And it's all just, like, gone. And The insurance company said, that wasn't the wind. It was like the storm surge, and you guys weren't covered. Well, nobody was there. Nobody saw whether it was. I would imagine the damage looks different from this storm surge versus the wind, but I don't know. And they were, I don't know, multi years before they got, I'm going to say 45 cents on the buck from the insurance company. They finally settled after years of court. You know, they didn't get paid, and then the place never got rebuilt. I don't think. So they're just out of summer home, and
An insurance company's job is to be really, really good at processing premiums and really, really bad at processing payments.
They're pretty good at investing too, most of the time. I mean, they're not horrible. But
just to shift gears a little bit, follow up on a couple of your conversations yesterday. You were talking about Carter and Reagan.
Yep.
And you know what the big difference between the two was, more than anything else, especially come election time, is Carter could never convey optimism.
Absolutely.
He always talked about the great national malaise. And Reagan, on the other hand, could give you that sunny optimism. And that's a key component of leadership. And that was where Carter was really... at fault as a leader is he couldn't rally people behind a vision of some good future state. Whereas, Reagan, and it was the second re-election, but, that whole morning in America message, Carter couldn't have delivered that message.
No.
Reagan, on the other hand, whether it was because he was an actor, whether it was because he sincerely believed it, or a combination of the two, could... And he was by nature a really optimistic man, and so he could convey that, and people latch on to that, and I think that's sort of the dichotomy of Trump, that I think a fair amount of his early appeal was that people liked his TV show, that his TV show had good ratings and a lot of people watched it, and so they liked him from that. And so he sort of overcame the dislikability that he had built up over the years, in part because of that. But he had, the Make America Great Again was a positive message that, and people could latch on to it. Now, did it work the second time? No, because, he was still a miserable human being.
Yeah.
and, and people got tired of that act, and it became you know, it became the I'll vote for anybody else, even though, you know, does Biden have that same kind of optimism? No, he never conveys it. He just doesn't come off, and there really aren't. When you were talking about candidates, I don't see a lot of candidates out there, especially on the Democrat side, that are good at that. That you know, can really tell you, you know, here's what a great world is going to look like 4 years from now, or whatever it is. And I think that's going to be a big deal in the upcoming election cycles.
Well, it is.
And by the way, I'm not sure who the Republican to do that is. I've seen a few who can do it, but I don't know if they have the profile to run for the president.
Well, there's no question, Kevin, that you know, I'll put it in mathematical terms, that the skill set necessary to get the job is probably nowhere near the same as the skill set you want in the job. You know, and it, that's a problem. I mean, I think, you know, it's
and actually, you want both.
You want both. Sure you do. But I mean, Carter went to the Naval Academy. The guy was a physicist, for God's sake, and he acted like one.
Brilliant man.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He acted like one. You know, and most people don't go out and have a couple of cocktails with a bunch of engineers and come away thinking that tomorrow is going to be a better place. just not the way they are. Even though they obviously are building stuff for the future to make things better, they just don't convey you as tomorrow is going to be a sunny day. But Reagan, what did Mike Royko say about Reagan? It was Mike Royko thought he was a total scam. Not total scam, but he said he had this amazing vision of an America that never existed. What do you say? A backward looking vision of an America that never existed, sort of like Mayberry.
Yeah, and while that may be true, he had it, and people could, you know, people could fall, get in line with that because it's appealing. But it, in general, you know, who are the best leaders in the business world? They're relentlessly optimistic. They don't think anything is ever going to stop, them or their teams from achieving their missions. It's always, you know, we have this, we can do this, and it becomes very much a we. That's just one dimension of it. There's a lot more that goes with it, and other aspects of leadership, but that's one that is just critical, and especially if you're trying to get elected and you need to bring people along to your point of view, there has to be a really strong optimism to it.
Well, I... Unfortunately, Kevin, I mean, and you know this, because I had that view of the world once, amazingly optimistic, and I still have that view about people, but I have an amazingly pessimistic view of this constant, monopolistic, get your ass right close to the ass of government or your nose up their ass or whatever it is, and you just beat down on people and. You constantly change the rules to where only you can win, and if you have enough money, you can do that. I worked.
Well, and the needle you have to thread with that message is that the current state is not acceptable. The current state, you know, here's what's wrong with it. But you always have to be able to shift into the why it's going to be better and why you're going to love how we get it.
All right. Now that you're being my counselor. And I would love to hear the other side of this, to be honest with you. But the one thing I've learned, though, is if people can shift it their way, and all of a sudden making money is not competitive anymore, that they just get some handed to them because they did something nefarious or close to nefarious, even though it may not be prosecutable, they never look back, Kevin. They never look back. You can never catch up. I used to think that if you were straight... you know, that you could just work harder and get there, but like my mom said, one good peak and bridge is worth two brilliant finesses. I mean, I don't see how you chase these drug companies that went for 20 years without paying taxes and bought up all these other places. I don't see how you do that. I mean, there's I don't see how anybody at any level, no matter how smart they are. I mean, I can manage money for people effectively. okay, because our time horizon is, you know, is far enough out, and I'm still good enough to where I can do the adjustments and I can do all those kinds of things where I can still mimic for people the intelligence brought to them from somebody who's been a trader on the floor for 20 years. But the idea that anybody could possibly compete with these people that are making $1-2 or $3 million a day with preferred feeds, they get the stuff faster, the payment for order flow, these kinds of things. There's no way Solomon couldn't break in and on a low level and walk into this business and make any money on that end. Because these guys have all the rules, all the non-enforcement all pointed their way. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to say that a firm like PTI that does nothing wrong probably has more FINRA people looking down our throat than Robin Hood. You know, and it's scary.
And while I understand that, somehow or another, you or Dan, probably Dan, he would be yeah. the talented one in this equation, is able to convince the people who work at PTI that in this world that is dominated by big companies, that you guys are a great place to be and have a great product to sell, and therefore people should work for you, and you're able to convince customers that in this world that is dominated by all these big players, that you're the place, you're the people who should be handling their money.
But I would never...
Somewhere in there, someone is being the optimist that makes that...
Oh, I'm still... I don't know if it's optimism or stubbornness. One or the other. Because being Irish, you have both, right?
Optimism, there's an aspect of stubbornness to an optimist.
But I would never even consider...
Because you never, ever, ever believe you can be stopped. You get obstacles, but never showstoppers.
But I would say that 30 years ago when we started PTI, okay, I always dreamed, I'm not dreamed, I thought this business, your barriers to entry were down enough, no matter how big the other guys got, as long as you could get into the business easy, they were never going to become monopolists. Yet now it's very, very difficult to get into business. I would never recommend somebody start up a firm like ours. No way in hell would I. I mean, I'd rather see you open up an oil change shop, to be honest with you, even though I love what I do. And that's just not right, Kevin. That's just not right. I mean, and you see it in every single industry. I mean, why did Pullman stop making cars? I mean, why now is the Chinese are making the CTA cars and the who are the guys that are going to be making the new RTA cars? They're not from the U.S. Why have you made it so difficult for somebody here to do business? I mean, it's insanity. I mean, why do the Chinese have to redo the gold, the Bay Bridge and go, you know, billions of dollars over budget, and we just paid them? We didn't care. We couldn't have done that with somebody here. I mean, it is really hard to get this stuff now. You know, I mean, it shouldn't be. And the constant is government involvement and some people getting an easier way than other people. You know, and now I've kicked back, we got a break here, but you wonder why the government is so incompetent with everything they do, it appears. Well, the people that do stuff with them did. I mean, look at real well quick and I'll shut up. Look at this Jane Byrne Strangler here. There's four lanes going through. So so you had your expressway had to go from 5 to 4 to get through downtown. Let's fix it. How do we fix it? We take 10 years and we drop it to 3. For God's sake, Kevin! By the time they're done, no one might live in this town.
No one will live here. By the time they're done, 5 won't be enough.
That's right. SP futures up 16. NASDAQ futures up 41. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox. at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and Wolfpack Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Even Sprint Weber on the board. SP Futures up 15. The NASDAQ Futures up 37. Starting September up to the upside here. Dow Futures up 107. Interesting that we'll keep it doing this. DAX up 22.1%. The FTSE up 59.8%. CAC around up 88, but it's at 1.3%. So a big rally in France today. Asia, Nikkei up 361, it's 1.3%. Shanghai up 23.6%. Hang Seng up 149.6%. I'm going to have to check the monthly numbers. Hang Seng might be close to being all the way back. Chinese factory activity shrunk in August, a private survey said, but we don't care. It's up. So it's all about repricing the currency everywhere, I think. Yesterday, the Dow was down 39, NASDAQ was down 6, and S&P was down 6. But, you know, we came up on the close again. We had to buy the dip, so that was the dip. So we're buying today. That's getting so the spoos can be up 25 and go down 2, and that's the dip. Anyway, ADP employment reports in a half hour. A 10-year up 2/32, two basis points, 1.32. Keeps creeping a little bit. The Bund up 2. Now we're down only minus 0.35. We were down to minus 0.49 a couple of weeks ago. Japan up to positive 0.03. So everybody's up a little bit on the interest rates. Oil up 20 cents to 68.70. Still not really threatening that 70 number again when it got to 73.5 or 74 a few weeks ago. Brent up 17 cents, 71.80. Natural gas up 11 cents, 4.49. That's high for natural gas. RBOB down a penny, 2.13. We've got gold down 2.20, but still 18.15, still hanging over 1,800. Silver down 4 cents, 23.96. And we've got copper up down a dime, 4.25. And we've got crypto, Bitcoin up 3.99 to 47,703. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Pretty quiet so far here on a Wednesday morning. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. The only traffic delays appear to be on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but those are just normal traffic volume slowdowns. The Southside expressways are all quiet. Weather today, a bit cooler than the last couple of days and very nice out there here on September 1st. partly cloudy skies, a high of 75, low humidity, a cool breeze. Right now it is mostly clear and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 93, which probably feels like 75 down there. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, White Sox doubled up the Pirates last night 4-2. Cubs with a nice road win over the Twins 3-1. And Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 3-0. Lastly, the Bears finalized their 53-man roster. Tariq Cohen will spend the first 6 weeks on the PUP list, physically unable to perform, coming off of his knee surgery. Defensive lineman Mario Edwards will miss the first two games as he's suspended. Only cuts of note were receivers Newsom and Ridley, who were both cut, which was somewhat of a surprise, but not really. Everything else looking ramped up and ready to go with Andy Dalton starting on Sunday night, a week from this coming Sunday in Los Angeles.
Chief. They kept three quarterbacks?
They kept three quarterbacks so far. I think Nick Foles will get traded before the season would be my guess.
Your buddy Kyle Long's on the PUP list too, somewhere. Kansas City or wherever he is.
He was in Kansas City. Is he still there?
Yeah, but he's not physically unable. But that's 6 weeks, right?
Yep.
He's on that list.
Yep, he is. I'm seeing that now. Kyle Long remains on the PUP as the Chiefs. I'm surprised he's even back with them. He tried to make a comeback with them last year, got hurt immediately, which is surprises no Bears fans. And they brought him back again. He's a great guy. He's a great locker room guy. If he's healthy, he's probably still a solid player, but he hasn't been healthy in 4 years.
Yeah, it's been a while, ever since he got that kind of freakish ankle injury.
Yeah, he's only, 32. He turns 33 in December.
Well, once you get, I think if you come back from something maybe a little too quick, I think all the other stuff goes because you favor it. I don't think you'd be favoring anything in pro football.
No.
Just
no. I'm excited for the Bears to have Eddie Goldman back as well.
Yeah.
He, of course, sat out last year because of COVID and didn't play. And they plug him back in there with Akeem Hicks and Bilal Nichols, who was a monster last year. And some of the younger guys they added, and I think that defensive front's going to be really good.
So what happens if the guy takes a whole year off from work and everything else, and like next week he gets COVID? Are you just better off getting it last year?
I don't know.
Just saying. There was a reason why I asked these questions, and because there are no answers to them, but when the COVID thing first started, Kevin, or maybe it might have been Frank, sent me a letter from ND Nation. There was this essentially old couple from, older than us. The guy went to Notre Dame, the girl didn't, because it was older. If they're older than us, there were no girls. And he basically said, he asked his doctor, this COVID thing's around. He goes, should we just get it today, or should we wait a year, not seeing our grandkids, not going on any vacations, not going anywhere, shut up in the house, and then when we finally leave, we get it a year from now. Why don't we just get it now?
I don't think that was mine, so it must have been Frank.
Yeah, it was. But obviously the treatments are a lot better, and you're way better off if you get it now than if you got it a year and a half ago. So I guess that would have been the answer. But the question is, was it really worth the year and a half in a cave only to come out and get it when you came out of the cave? But hey, what do you think now, Kevin? I assume we're all going to live to 95, right? Isn't that the number?
I'm pretty focused on making it to tomorrow.
That's a good one. I mean, tomorrow is promised to nobody, as they say. So let's see. Now, if you're 83, you're okay because the Social Security is going to last another 12 years. If you're 82, you got problem. You got to start worrying about it. Americans who rely on their retirement will run out of money in 12 years, 1 year sooner than expected. So if you're 83, you make it. If you're 82, the last year, you're living on the corner.
So do I have to keep paying into it?
Well, absolutely. You never stop paying.
Since we know it's going to run out, can't I stop paying into it?
Well, if you stop paying, then it's going to be...
Yeah, and I have two words for you, Matt. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you guys paid into it too, obviously, but I'm not going to get anything from it, so I'm wondering, this doesn't seem like a great deal for me.
Well, I mean, we probably are. Now, we also got to find a way. Are we really going to, as a president, are we really going to demand everybody have electric cars without, but of course we can't have any kind of power plants either, so we have no power for the cars. And how the hell are we going to tax them since they don't use gas?
That's the mileage tax.
Ah. Well, how do you...
And so when they put in the mileage tax, here's what's going to happen with that, because that's already on the table now. It's in the bill that's, you know, maybe is traveling through Congress, maybe is not. I don't know where it stands at the moment. But there is an experiment in how to do it, which means it's step one.
Yep.
Towards implementation. And so what they're going to do is they're going to have trackers in your car that then report back your mileage so that you can be taxed appropriately. And that's how they're going to do it for electric cars. I guarantee you that is going to go into every single car, and gas tax is not going to go away. It's not going to replace gas tax. If you drive electric, you'll only pay the one tax. But if you drive a gasoline-powered car, you will pay double.
Well, that's, I'm sure, in the vision. When are people going to... When are we going to say no?
Probably when we have a mountain that's made out of batteries and they don't know what to do with it, of old batteries that are worn out.
When are
we going to say no? Ask Carl that question on Friday. He has a real strong feeling about when to say no.
Just
shifting gears a second, he just put up something new, and I've only had a glance at it, but it has to do with what's that act called? It's the preparedness. The Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, aka PREP. And, you know, he was getting into why some treatments are and are not allowed to be prescribed, why some doctors will not prescribe some treatments. And it really gets down to who has a waiver of liability associated with it. And that's built into the PREP Act. So you ain't going to get a treatment that's effective if it's not covered by the PREP Act, but you can still get remdesivir, which doesn't work. So, you know, have at it.
Well, anybody, I mean, I don't know the formula, but anybody who doesn't kind of observe that in the Chicago area, and I don't even know what it's like in the rural area, but it's got to be the same way. You're seeing four or five healthcare companies essentially take over the entire city. And there's very, very few independent doctors anymore compared to what there were. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, five or six. But virtually everybody's had to join one of these groups. And once you join the group, I don't care if you're, Audrey meets an awful lot of people through her real estate stuff. And there's guys that are like surgeons and have been leading surgeons in hospitals for years, and like 2 years before they retire, they'll move, and all of a sudden they'll join one of these groups. And the guys are like 65 years old, and they're on call for a weekend, because and they're only getting paid a certain amount. And, you know, all the policy, all the opinions, everything comes through the group. I mean, you're not going to get the Northwestern Medical Group or the North Shore Medical Group come out against some sort of a policy that Lori Lightfoot's, you know, handpicked medical person says. They're not going to do that because they're so bent.
Not if they want their next building permit.
Not if they want their next, or how much money do they get from the city or the county or the state on a daily basis? I mean, how much do you get for the, if somebody comes in with a bullet wound, I got to believe that they're paying. Where the bullet is housed, that person's not paying, I don't think. Or at least not very often. And, this is all kind of wound together, and it's very insidious. It's very Nazi-esque. It really is. I mean, less and less people, more and more. I mean, you're not going to get, was the one last week? One of my buddies in the industry called up. They stopped, looking into payment for order flow. How did that stop? Well, did one of the guys from the four or five firms that give all this money to politicians, did they just make it go away? I mean, this is becoming relentless, Kevin, and it doesn't matter whether it's the Dems or the Republicans. I don't think you can have an independent person. I don't know how long it would take to start tearing down the things that need to be torn down in this country to make things competitive again. I wouldn't want that job. I mean, I can see what has to happen in some areas, but I wouldn't want to be the guy who did it. What a miserable life that would be. But somebody has to do it at some point here. I mean, we can't keep going this way to where, you know, we keep talking about the middle class, and yet you look at even doctors are becoming middle class. They're just employees now. I mean, who are these people that run them? I mean, if anybody wanted someone independent, it would have been your doctor. That's not happening anymore. These guys just shake their head. I mean, you try and get by a doctor's assistant. I mean, if you can't fill out a piece of paper that says that's what this particular treatment is for, the doctor's now he's not an independent anymore. I mean, we can't go a month here in Chicago or 6 months where a hospital that was independent is not taken over by somebody else. You know, we're gonna end up with what? There's gonna be the North Shore Group, the Northwestern Group, the University of Chicago Group, and the Rush Group. And maybe the guys out in DuPage. Is that gonna be it? Loyola might hang in there because they're taking people over now too. So maybe six groups? Are you going to get some kind of an independent medical area out of that? And how easy is that to control?
No. But shifting back, the point on this is if a doctor has a choice between treatments that are completely indemnified against any liability for one treatment and not for another, which one you're going to get?
But you don't want an
and if that indemnification is unduly influenced by, say, I don't know, a Pfizer, then what's going to happen?
Well, but you can't if you ever. But I guess it gets even worse. I mean, I think. I don't know. I mean, when Matty first went to work at his place, and I hate to use his name, but I think the people he worked for was a startup, very successful kind of place, and they were bought by somebody. And the new guys, I think, are, according to Manny, are pretty good. But what if you get bought by somebody else, and all of a sudden you can't do any outside work, you can't do this. I mean, in our industry now, for whatever reason, they don't want you having. If you go to work for Charles Schwab right now, you cannot have an outside job. If you're a bartender on a Saturday night because you're not making enough money, they're going to fire your ass. Now, what gives them, you know, based on FINRA wants that? What makes FINRA tell an employer that you have to control the rest of a person's life? That's a dictum that's coming down by. I mean, whose agenda is that, Kevin?
Well, it's an interesting question of whose agenda it is because it definitely is somebody. Somebody feels that there is a right to control. To control another's life like that. What's that mindset? But how much have we seen that mindset in the last year?
Or a year
and a half. How much have we seen that insistence on controlling your life? Because we can always justify it. We can always say it's for the greater good. But the problem is when it's for the greater good, you know, who's defining the greater good and where is there and is there a line that gets drawn that says this is too far?
Well, I think what's happening is you don't see people creeping down that road. You might ask yourself, okay, what does this mean in regarding stocks and jacks? Okay, well, I'm going to flip the page here real quick, Kevin. What does it mean in terms of, we just talked about the market being up again today, and it's up every friggin' month. Okay, it's fine. Now, and I don't have a problem with that because my investors are making money and so forth, but yesterday I went through the numbers, and for the last 7 months, the market is up 7 months in a row. I don't know if every single average is 7 months in a row, but the market is generally up 7 months in a row. And I went back, and the Federal Reserve has printed money and essentially bought securities. More bonds, but if they're buying bonds, somebody else can turn around and buy stocks because it's not. Once you're entering the system, you're entering the system. They've bought essentially $142 billion a month, so trading days, So there's 22 trading days, 21 in every month. So you're basically talking about $7 billion a day the government is pouring into the system. Now you ask yourself, how does the market work? Well, some people are buying, some people are selling. If more people are buying and are insistent about it, the price creeps up because they're willing to pay a little more. If more people are selling and insistent about it, the price creeps down. So every single day, Christmas Eve, day after Thanksgiving, you name it, the Fed government is like, if I had a new client every day, which would be unbelievable, wouldn't it, that signed up for PTI and said, Chief, here's $7 billion. I want it invested tomorrow. You don't think with that kind of cash that every single time I see any little weakness in the market, I'm not saying the Fed is doing this by the minute, that I start buying, that the market will not be higher if this money came from, you know, some guy landed in a spaceship from someplace and handed me $7 billion a day. You don't think I would move the market, especially if it was known that somebody was going to do it every day and announced, and oh, by the way, when everybody talks, we do more, so they sound like they so people think they know what they're talking about. This is relentless, Kevin. Now it's become very easy for the government not only to make up money, but to hand it out to people that play ball with them more than other people. And oh, by the way, everybody else is going to know exactly when it's going to stop, and they'll get out, and you won't. I mean, it's just. But this is wrong, Kevin. It's just wrong. But most people think, and I would too. Okay, if we could find a way where I'd invested some money and every day the market went up, there's people would say it's the best thing your congressman ever did. It's the only thing he ever did for me. If you could pass a law that said the market can only go up and not go down, how many people would vote for that law? Like everybody? I mean, right? I mean, but how many people think of the other? Okay, now if it's not a free market, what do they have to do? What's the flip side of it? The flip side is there's money entering the system. It's a manipulated market. Okay, obviously the bonds, when you look at, people will say, gee, well, look at the inflationary expectations. Look at the tips. Well, the Fed's buying the tips too. So how is that a fair price that tells you anything? I mean, it doesn't. But now you're going to find that the people who got the $3,000 check, that all of a sudden their taxes are going to be up more than $3,000, and they're going to be paying it back. Now other people got maybe several million dollars from the government, and maybe they sold their business. They're never going to pay that back. Now, I mean, you're going to find that somewhere along the line here, Joe Biden, just like Ronald Reagan did, by the way, in the next year or so, we're going to find a tax bill that's going to hit up on electric cars. You're going to raise the Social Security tax. You're going to probably raise the unemployment tax. All this stuff is going to happen because these guys, even they will realize that you can't just, right now, they think they can print money forever. And the younger people, they don't understand I don't think, well, let's put it this way, the young guy who goes to work for Schwab, he's willing to, you know, to say, I'll give this person control over the rest of my life because I need a job, or everybody else is doing it, or something. You and I, Kevin, we're not going to last that long. I mean, hopefully we last some period of time, but when it's this gradual, I don't think people, they don't even notice it's happening, right? I mean, remember, there's the Far Side article.
Until it's too late.
Well, there's a Far Side article, a cartoon, and a guy is moving the... What was the stupid boss with the bad haircut? The girl says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm moving the chief's cubicle in by an eighth of an inch." And he goes, "She goes, what are you doing that for?" He goes, "Well, he'll never notice." Because if you only move it in an eighth of an inch a week, you think nothing's happening. All of a sudden, the next one has the boss trying to squeeze in the door, and he could barely get his gut through the door. And he had no idea that, like, you know, 2 years before, the door was like 4 inches wider. But the guy was doing like, you know, an eighth or a 16-inch a week. I mean, but who's behind it, Kevin? I mean, who needs to control the place like that? Why do you want people control? Why can't you just let them be on their own? Why is it so important for FINRA to tell Schwab to make sure nobody has an outside job? I mean, who's behind that?
Oh, well, because you want to control the future, Mr. Gibbs.
Can we really do that?
Chinatown reference.
Yeah.
I think some people think we can.
I don't know. I don't get it. But
no, it's just. You know, these darn people won't listen And so we're just going to have to, they don't know what's good for them, and they won't listen to me, so we're just going to have to force it to happen.
Hey, you're...
Whatever it is.
As I'm asking everybody who's on the show this week, you know, we got a minute or two, with those huge trades last week that I talked about, as a way of review, somebody bought 90,000 VIX November 20 calls for $5. That's a $45 million trade. I'm suspecting it's either the right same person or the same point of view. A week or two before, somebody bought, you know, in the tens of thousands of the November 85 VIX, which is like really up there since the VIX is 16, and sold the October 55s. Now, that tells you that somebody is convinced the world's going to hell, like, really bad, but not until November and only in November. And I'm trying to figure out, Kevin, I'm racking my brain as to what piece of information somebody would have to say that the market's going to the crap hole, but not this week, not next week, not even October, to the point where you're selling the October. Because if you're wrong by 3 weeks, and this happens in October, and those October calls can go to 20 while your November calls are still zero, that thing could bite you in the ass like nothing, like a Tyrannosaurus, that spread. So somebody is really, really sure that whatever's going to happen is not going to happen until November. And I cannot believe, ever in my 40 years in the business, that anybody is that sure. I've seen people that sure of a direction, okay? But I've never been somebody that sure of a direction and just the day it's going to happen. I want to know what the hell they're seeing and what they're thinking about. And the only thing I've come up with, and again, this is just absolutely... Don't take me as Rasputin here. The only thing I can think of, Kevin, is that somebody has got his nose in the Bureau of Labor Statistics and somehow knows that they're going to let loose with a November CPI number that's like 2 or something. I can't think of anything else that would be so month-specific that you would be willing to actually sell the VIX in October and buy it in November to that size. Is it time to put me in the funny farm or what? What can you think of anything that anybody would have a hint of? There's no election. There's nothing on the regular calendar that I can see. Or what am I missing?
No, maybe it's just those Reddit kids screwing with us.
The Reddit kids do not have $45 million on one trade. They're doing 4 and 5 shares or something. Big difference.
Yeah, I know.
That's the biggest trade I've ever seen in a... Now, there's been notionally bigger trades. You know, if somebody sells a whole bunch of calls in the SPX, for instance, against a big portfolio. But it's not the same as just buying an option on a specific date. I've never seen that. I mean, maybe there has been. Might be people that will call up and say, geez, Chief, 2 years ago this guy bought this stuff. Well, if you know one bigger, please let me know. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much. Talk to you on Friday.
We need a countdown clock on the website.
Yeah, we should do that. S&P futures up 16 now. S&P futures up 44. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Brent Weber. On the board, we have S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 42. So we're racketing into an up day in September after seven positive months in a row in the market. And I think Russell's buying. Russell, how are you, buddy?
You think I'm behind all of that buying?
I think that you talked to the University of Indiana and with your knowledge of the VIX. Boy. And those guys made that trade last week. They bought the $45 million worth of VIX calls in November.
You know, just I'm going to – you love it when I come on and correct you, but
– yes. Well, that's, you are a professor. You're correcting my paper.
Well, so they're looking for something specific to happen. And – but it could – you want to have the November options anytime between October expiration, which is – even early, it's early relative to the third Friday.
Right.
It's usually the Wednesday before that. So it could be late October or kind of the first half of November that they're trying to target there.
All right, so it could be October 31st.
I've seen trades that are bigger than that. I've assisted on trades that are bigger than that. But what's different about this one is that they're short volatility. From what I heard you say a few minutes ago, they're shorted. Kind of short it in October, and then they're looking for a big move up in November.
Or two trades. One was the diagonal. One was the diagonal. One was the diagonal where a couple weeks ago somebody bought the November 85s and sold the October 55s. So obviously, if that were to explode on you this week, you got a problem. Like if we went to 85 today.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah. I mean, the second month, it really wouldn't hurt you this week, because September's the front month still.
Right, but you'd be chasing it.
But there's a window in there where things could go pretty badly for you, because the front month VIX future is going to follow, it's not even going to go up as much as VIX, but it's going to follow VIX a lot more closely than the second month future. Right now they're the second and third month. So,
you know, I agree with you.
It's a quiet time.
I've seen, Well, I watch this, I don't study it every single minute, but I watch the option unusual activity ticker. And you see,
yeah.
I use the term goofballs. I don't know who's doing it. People must have a lot of money. But you'll see, like, the silver's trading, 22. It's up, 22, 21. It's up 7 cents today. Once in a while, you'll see, something go by there and somebody will buy, 8,000 of the next March 35s for, 20 cents or something like that. And you sit there and go, gee, here's a guy who thinks, currency's going to zero and gold and silver are going to be, what people carry around or something. Who knows what? But it's always some kind of wacky speculative 20 cents, 25, 30 cents. I don't know. And obviously, I tried to say that I'm sure people, with groups that you've advised and so forth have made, covered call rights or put purchases, protective puts that are bigger in notional value than the one I'm talking about. But I'm just saying, I have never seen, since I've been watching this thing for a few years now, I've never seen anybody buy 90,000 of a $5 call on spec. I mean, that's not some sort of a hedge or a protection or something. I mean, usually people doing
I'm certain this is a hedge.
But it's a sloppy hedge. It's not like buying S&P puts on your S&P.
Again, they're hedging some sort of specific risk that they're seeing between October and November. Yeah. And the people that typically use that use VIX as a hedge in that sort of size, they're typically bond people and not stock people.
Okay.
And it's usually I know there are a couple of really large VIX trades that kept coming through and kept getting rolled, and I kind of know who the entity behind them was, and it was a high yield manager. It was not a stock manager.
Okay.
And that's just because if we do get some sort of equity market event, it will hit high yield bonds harder than it will hit regular old corporate bonds. And there are managers that have found that long volatility exposure through VIX gives them a good hedge for their portfolio.
But a guy like me, I'm so straight that if you put me in charge of a $30 billion portfolio and you asked me to hedge it, if it was an S&P 500 portfolio, I'm going to buy S&P 500 puts. I'm not going to mess around with the VIX and hope they match up. Right? I mean, I'm going to buy the insurance on the product. I mean,
here's the problem with, all right, let's say that you decide you're going to use put options on the S&P 500. And you're targeting, again, you're targeting that time frame, but you think now is a good time to go ahead and put the hedge on, be a little bit early. Well, if the equity market goes up 5% between now and, let's just say, late October, and then we get a 5% correction, how well did your put purchase work?
If I rolled
not
them up.
Not particularly well.
If I rolled them up like I normally would, it would be fine.
But it would have cost you, and you would have to take some sort of action. The thing
is,
VIX kind of it's a range bound instrument, so it's like the VIX can be hovering around 15 or 16, and the S&P 500 can work its way up over the next 4 or 6 weeks or so, and VIX may still be around 15 or 16, which means those calls will hold their value better than if you had purchased S&P 500 puts. It's really an either or decision. But that's why people turn to VIX for, you know, equity market hedges. Just for one thing, it explodes to the upside when you get the kind of maybe somebody's looking for there.
But
it does hold its value, and it holds its, even if you buy the front month calls, they tend to hold their value pretty darn well until you get just a few days until expiration.
All right,
which gives you a chance to roll them and roll them cheaper than, again, puts that end up being farther out of the money on the SPX.
Okay, but now you're giving the good side of the story for the VIX. I think you're turning into a Are you turning into a politician in me?
I've written two books on VIX. I'm going to defend the crap out of it.
I know, but the flip side of the coin is if the S&P drops 8% today, my puts, because I can exercise them early, are going to go right with it, where the September VIX might go to the moon, Alice. The November may not.
You can't exercise SPX options early.
But sure you can.
S&P 500 index options are European style. You can sell them, but you can't exercise them.
Oh, okay, the spider. Let's say I do more than the spider. My clients are...
The thing is that what you're saying is inaccurate with respect to the behavior of SPX options versus VIX options, because SPX options, a lot of people don't think this deeply, and you know this, but we don't talk about it that much. Really, the options are based the underlying is truly a forward value of the underlying, not today's value, but the forward value of the S&P 500 is relatively well known because we know what interest rates are, we know what dividends are going to be paid. VIX futures don't have that same fair value relationship.
Correct.
And because they don't have that same fair value relationship, the options don't necessarily do what you would expect them to do if you think they're based off of spot VIX.
Right,
the difference between the forward S&P 500 value and the current S&P 500 value is held together with a fair value relationship.
Correct.
That doesn't work with VIX. That's the big difference there. It's not the European versus American style.
No, but you're absolutely correct when you said if I'm long these calls, Right, we're getting pretty technical here, but sometimes people love it when we get technical.
I know, I'm trying not to.
But that's okay. I mean, the listeners, they write in and tell me don't.
You lit the professor fuse, and I went with it.
Well, but everything has a flip side. You're correct.
If the
market were to creep up for 2 months, your VIX is still going to be sitting here. And then if it collapses the last week, you're going to get the benefit out of those calls, like if it happened today. Now, but this flip side of the coin is if you have, I'll say spider puts, or this month's SPX put, if the SPX drops 10%, and you can cash in those puts, and if it comes back up, it's the other side of the coin. Maybe you're right back to the 16 VIX, and your Novembers didn't move as much. So, but here's what I wanted to ask you though: is the danger the danger here is. Is I looked because I knew you were coming on, and I knew you'd be very well versed in this. What sort of happens is now these guys, and I went and looked at the futures volume. Now this is part of the complexity of the VIX. There's the futures every month, and the option is on the future. It's not on the cash, correct? So
the best underlying pricing vehicle is the futures.
Correct.
And if you are the market maker, you're going to use the corresponding futures to hedge yourself.
Right. So whoever sold this person the 90,000 calls has to hedge him or herself, correct? Well, they couldn't get enough of the November futures because they don't trade that much yet to hedge the whole mess. So you saw a huge balloon in the September and October futures, which means, for lack of a better term, for the weekend or for the week or for the next couple of weeks, the person who sold them is probably hedged okay, right, Russell? But not exact.
Yeah.
If something crazy were to happen, that person could now be in trouble because they're short these calls and they're long the futures. Mm-hmm. So they could be in a position of just what you're talking about. We could have a huge quiet week. And they could lose $2 on their September futures, and the November calls are hanging right in there. So those guys need to get to November as fast as they can. And that spread between the November and the October, knowing the position they have, they might have trouble doing that, I think. Maybe.
It might create some excess volatility in the futures if we get, you know, 1 or 2 point moves during the day where they've got, or even more so, if we wake up on Sunday, if we pop up Sunday as they're walking up to the 18th green and the U.S. markets are starting to open, and if we get some big overnight move in big over the weekend move in the S&P 500 futures, you might see excess volatility as they try to hedge themselves in a very illiquid Sunday night VIX futures market.
This is a real hard question, but you would know the answer more than I would. If something, I won't say, long-term capital, something, one of these historical weekly or biweekly fiascos we've had through the years, and not really so many lately, but suppose, like it's Sunday night and, we're still with September 4th or whatever it would be. Well, actually, it would probably be Monday night because we got Monday off. Somebody finds out about one of these dollar-denominated debts from China. Somebody just said, screw you, I'm not paying. And all of a sudden, it sends a little bit of a shockwave through. Nothing huge, but the spoons are down, 60 or 70 on Tuesday, and maybe another 50 on Wednesday. So your VIX balloons to, maybe a 28 or something. I mean, pretty high, but not crazy. Now, the near term is going to go up 12 points. Where would you expect the Novembers to go? I mean, they're going to go up, but they're not going to go up 12. Or would it be 6, 5, 4? Does it? I mean, if we think this is going to be something,
it would be around 3 or 4. And the reason that I know that is I know what I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I've actually calculated. You'll love this. I've actually calculated the beta of the futures based on the number of days to expiration relative to VIX, and it's around a quarter to a third when you're looking that far out. So you know, a quarter of 12 points would be three, a third would be four.
Does it matter?
If you get a 3 or 4 point move, you get a 3 or 4 point move out of November if you got a 12 point move out of Vicks tomorrow.
Does it matter, Russell? In other words, could you predict based on the crisis? I mean, what's the variance in that? Because,
yeah.
I mean, if it's a Chinese debtor, I mean, everybody's thought were going to be in 3 weeks, we'll forget about this. What if it was something that wasn't going to be over in 3 weeks? Would the November ever almost go lockstep with
September? November would start working its way up, but it would hover at lower levels until we get October expiration, and you really do see some short-term price adjustment in the what becomes the front-month future. You typically see it come under a little bit of pressure because normally it's at a premium relative to spot VIX, but that will work a bit in the opposite direction if we're in deep backwardation, which for everybody, because talking about backwardation on radio doesn't work very well. That just means that maybe spot VIX is much, much higher than where the futures are. And if we go into October expiration, October is going to be right up there with spot VIX because the futures settle into a VIX-like calculation, which is very close to spot VIX. So the futures approach spot VIX, but that would even happen. I mean, there would still be some catching up from the front month future because the way that people are conditioned to trade volatility products is that spikes in VIX are typically short-lived. That doesn't mean they always are, but more often than not, a 10 or 20% move in VIX will be given up fairly quickly.
Well, they're caused by a crisis, and in the last 50 years, virtually every crisis has passed. Right?
Yeah.
So it's over. You know.
When the COVID thing really did start to, when it started to kick in February, March, you could see, you know, spot VIX working its way up and the futures thinking it was going to be a short-lived issue.
Yeah, because
we came to realize that it was not a short-lived. It's, for goodness sake, when I pop on to listen to you guys in the morning to know what you're talking about before I come on, and the first word I heard you say when I popped on this morning was COVID.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's still going on. I had a student ask me about the South African version of COVID last night. I hadn't even heard of that.
Well, I've heard of that.
I don't even want to know anymore.
That's the is that the Echo? The next one?
I have no idea.
Well, because we're using Greek alphabets here, right? So the first one was the alpha, and then there was the beta. We got to we're at the delta, and then the next one would be the echo, correct?
Yeah. You used a Far Side cartoon example in the first hour. I'm going to go with South Park.
Okay.
And I'm not discounting the event at all, I promise. But shortly after 9/11, the South Park guys, they did a really good thing making fun of Osama bin Laden. But they also they had one of the kids' parents where the mom would not get off the couch and just kept staring at the news over and over again. And the husband was like, you know, let's try to pick ourselves up and get on with our lives. I think that's what everybody's doing now. We're just it's just can't be in the forefront of our minds anymore.
By the way, do you think talk about the big lie? Which we weren't talking about, but since you brought it up, do you think if Biden and enough people say often enough that Osama bin Laden was the guy behind the mastermind behind the 9/11 things, do you think it makes it true when it really wasn't true?
I don't think it makes it true.
But, I mean, if you keep telling it often enough.
Because truth is what really happened, but that becomes the, instead of, you know what, there's truth and there is an accepted narrative.
Yes. Very good. And by the way, I like that. I'm going to use that. Can I use that?
The accepted narrative is, and just kind of came up. That's pretty good for early in the morning before
coffee. That's very good.
Can we use that? Can we use that?
What, accepted narrative?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything I say in the hour that I'm on here is now your intellectual property.
Accepted narrative.
But yeah, I mean, I mean, truth is what it actually was, but truth gets, you know, we just deviated into philosophy. You know, what really happened, I don't doubt that that's what really happened, that, you know, it was planned in the way that most of us believe it. You know, that most of us, what we believe is truly what happened. I do think some screwy things happened right after. You know, there was one building I think they may have taken down on purpose, but they're not going to admit that they did that.
Taken down on purpose.
But I do what?
Taken down on purpose.
One of the later that evening, one of the other, you know, there were several World Trade. There was like World Trade Center up to World Trade Center 9.
Oh yeah, well, the trading floor was.
Dan Rather was on, and a building basically just suddenly went down behind him. And he said, "Wow, that almost seemed like a controlled explosion." And apparently, whatever building that happened to, there may have been some NSA and some other things that were kind of sensitive, and they felt like that was the best move.
Well, I do think
some things happened afterwards that aren't necessarily the truth.
Well, I think there was a lot of looting went on. A lot of looting went on.
Well, yeah, that, and then unfortunately, I think there are people that look at every crisis type situation and try to figure out how to benefit personally from it.
Well,
probably a lot of people that benefited personally from it. I think the federal government used it as an opportunity to go back into Iraq when they didn't have anything to do with it. There are a new narrative all of a sudden the day after that happened was that Iran, Iraq, and North Korea somehow were an axis of evil. Well, hell, Iran and Iraq hate each other, and they probably weren't even talking to North Korea until they got lumped into those three.
Well, the story as I understand it, and again, it's not like I'm reading, is the more we pin this on Osama bin Laden to the 17 Saudis and 3 Egyptians that actually did it, do they get more and more of a pass? Does anybody even remember that there were 17 Saudis out of the 20 yet at this stage? It's all Osama bin Laden.
I remember that, but that's not something that's brought up an awful lot, so it is not part of the narrative.
Well, didn't the sequence?
With anything, I'll bet you, if you walked around on the street and asked what nationality the people, you know, the majority of the people were that flew planes into various or buildings or tried to, you know, you would think they were all from Afghanistan.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's what I'm going to ask my kids that when I see them this weekend.
Well, and plus the
what country do you think the people were from, and see what they think, because you know it happened before. First off, it happened before they were alive.
Yep.
So, you know.
Yeah, the official breakdown: hijackers in the September 11 attacks, 15 Saudi Arabians, 2 from the United Arab Emirates, 1 from Lebanon, and 1 from Egypt.
Okay, that's 0
Iraq.
That's more accurate, right? Yeah.
0
early on, it was 17 Saudis and 3 Egyptians. So I'm wrong. I should update my knowledge here too. Okay,
my narrative.
Yes. Now, didn't those people, I believe, approached Osama bin Laden with the story and got some financing out of him? Isn't that the deal? That he didn't dream it up, from what I understand. But I got a good one, Matty. You should have been with me. Of course, you have better things to do these days. And you, I say that because you do, not because I'm kidding you. I actually ran into a guy in the Tripoli that knows the dude who had the flight school in Florida, not the one in Arizona, that tried to notify the FBI that said something really was strange with these guys learning how to fly and not caring if they landed, and he could get nowhere through the bureaucracy. He actually knows the guy. Which, whatever, those are stories that are in the back of my mind when I bitch about the bureaucracy. And like, all those guys had to do is let that up the chain. And we would have, up until then, Maddie, before your time, the story was, there were hijackings all the time, right? When I was, how old would we have been, Russell, when we had like a hijacking a week, the Libya, Muammar Gaddafi,
oh, yeah,
and those guys?
It was common.
How many people got hijacked to Cuba?
It was a couple times a year we seemed to have one.
Well, how many people got on domestic flights in the U.S. get hijacked to Cuba? It wasn't an everyday event, but the story was the pilot was always supposed to do what the hijacker said, land in the other place, and then let the guy out and then fly home. That was the plan. Well, clearly, if we'd have known some guys were planning something different, you might have told the pilots, hey, if somebody starts to hijack your plane, don't let them in and resist. And I think the protocol would have been different, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. No, and they changed it since.
Yeah, they changed it since. Hey, don't let them in. Because it's a whole different brand of ball. We're probably done talking about this, but we'll come back. We'll talk more about... is there 7 months in a row, Russell, $140 billion a month, we now have an infrastructure plan that's going to call for like a real lot more federal money. What does this thing ever end, or is it becoming too easy? I mean, I'm going to ask you this. You are the professor. SP Futures, that's called a tease, by the way. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 58. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
To tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 17 now. NASDAQ futures up 60. We are just relentless to the upside. I mean, we just absolutely have to be. Ever since we had the little bit of a sell-off a couple of weeks ago, we've just been every single day. It's just been money pouring in, and I think it feeds on itself, because if a stock goes from, you know, 40 to 80, you can now borrow $40 on it, buy something else. I mean, it's a way of the money supply. I mean, dramatically, your borrowing power, every time the market's up, the borrowing power goes up with it. We're seeing it happen. Dow's up 106 over in Europe. We've got some rallies here too. DAX now up 70.4%. FTSE up 60.8%. France is the outlier, up 92.1%. You very seldom see France move more than a percent. Today they are putting the whip to the French market. Nikkei up 361, 1.3%. Shanghai up 23.65. Hang Seng up 149, which is 0.6. Yesterday, way of review, Dow was down 39. Buy the dip. S&P's down 6. Buy that dip. NASDAQ futures down 6 as well. Bonds, 10-year rates actually creeping up a little bit. We're up to 1.31. It's up 1 basis point. Bund is up 1 basis point to minus 0.36. Japan, up 1 basis point to positive 0.03, but still right around 0. I mean, given 100th here, 100th there. Oil up 20 cents, 68.70. Brent up 20 cents, 71.83. Natural gas up 6 cents. Pretty good move. 1.5%. 4.44. RBOB unchanged, 2.13. We've got gold down $1.79 to 18.16. Had a move up yesterday. Silver up 3 cents, 24.04. Copper up down 9 cents. Wow, 4.28. Crypto up 471 now. It was the Bitcoin, 47,775. Manny, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have some issues now on the area expressways. We'll start with the worst of it, and that's up on the Edens. Northbound Edens between Foster and Peterson is now closed due to a police investigation. State police are canvassing the outbound Edens from an earlier reports of shots fired around 5:30 a.m. this morning. And now there's has the Edens and Kennedy completely jammed up if you're heading on the northbound side because of that closure. So we'll see how long this investigation lasts. But as you can imagine, that's causing significant issues on the north side expressways. On the Eisenhower and Stevenson, normal traffic building up there, but no accidents to report. We do have a crash on the south side, I-57 on the northbound side, just before 119th Street. There is a crash that's causing stop-and-go traffic. And then down near Joliet, there's a crash on I-80 on the eastbound side, just before Illinois 53, which is exit 132 on the eastbound side of I-80. So some significant crashes in the area on the expressways. Off the expressways, there's an accident on Route 59 and Stearns Road, right near Bartlett there. And then north of that, that accident became clear. So we'll call it right there, but some issues already here on a Wednesday morning. So keep that in mind if you're heading out and about. Weather today, beautiful day, partly cloudy skies, a high of 75. Right now it's crystal clear and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 93 today. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, White Sox beat the Pirates 4-2. Cubs topped the Twins 3-1. Diamondbacks were shut out by the Padres 3-0. Chief.
Yeah, I'm reading here as we're talking about how we got on this terrorism subject. Remember the first, this before, Manny, when were you born?
83.
Well, so in February of 93, do you remember even as a little tyke, the original bomb that hit the World Trade Center?
Of course.
I
remember that very well.
The guy who did it, his thought was, he put this truck next to a couple of beams that he thought would take the one tower down, and it would smack into the other tower and take the other one. To his intention was to kill 250,000 people. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's
didn't he like not kill anyone or
a couple of people got killed in the basement.
I knew it was
killed six people.
Okay,
more
six people died.
But they had a huge hole in the basement of World Trade Center. And you know how they caught the guy? I mean, this is how what was Leopold Loeb, the perfect crime? The one guy left his glasses there, and they chased the glasses back. The University of Chicago murder. They used a rental truck, and they figured that was the truck because it was blown from the inside out instead of the outside in. Well, they found the VIN number, so they were able to track it, and they waited at the place. And one of the idiots showed up a couple weeks later trying to get his $400 deposit back. On the truck they blew up. It's like really? you got to be kidding me, right? But anyway, the thing had massive amounts of a blow up in it. It was fertilizer and hydrogen and all kinds of stuff, and it shook the hell out of the building. And then it took them like months to take care of to fix the downstairs because it blew holes in the parking lot and all that stuff. But it didn't topple the building. I mean, the blast was able to go other places just next to the beam they had, but, I mean, that would have been interesting. I mean, if they actually would have knocked one into the other building, how the guy thought he was going to put it one way or the other, I have no idea. But they ended up finding those guys. And is that guy still in jail? He must be. I remember the name. Ramzi Youssef was the guy. He's probably still in jail somewhere if he's not dead. But, yeah, this is, I mean, these threats have been kind of around for a while. I don't know what. Let's hope that the Afghanistan does not become another hotbed for these guys, or the Chinese or the Russians don't somehow get involved. Of course, if they want to go in there and do what we did, I guess more welcome to them. Huh? But you wonder when you come through. And Kenny Polcari was on yesterday. I don't know if you listened. He said he has such an odd feeling of this going all the way back to the. The towers going down and 20 years of doing this and the people killed and wounded and all the money spent. And now it turns out that we didn't really accomplish anything other than killing Bin Laden, which maybe we could have done anyway. I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of I don't know what to think. Do you, Russell?
As far as, you throw a bunch of different things out there, but.
Yeah, you guys have such mixed emotions.
The one thing that keeps popping in my mind, and I don't want to, Biden inherited it, and he just pulled the Band-Aid off too hard, and the results were pretty, pretty disastrous. The planning of getting out probably could have gone a lot better, but why didn't we get out after we got Bin Laden, if that was our goal?
I think that some people get entrenched. I think
people
were making money. A lot of people were making money over there. Yeah. We'd started this nation building thing. We started giving all these Taliban people all this money. I mean, there's got to be how many $100 bills over there has got to be astronomical.
Oh gosh, I saw a video of where what was left behind, and there were bricks of U.S. cash left behind.
Yeah.
Look like a very, very successful drug dealer.
Well, then I guess we started paying them off with Viagra pills as well.
Did we really?
Yeah.
No, that may be one of the worst ideas ever, right there.
I would say, but you know, how do
if anything, we should have told them it was Viagra and put whatever the anti-Viagra is in there.
Instead of something that makes things stronger, makes things weaker?
Yeah.
What was the stuff, saltpeter?
We should have just made Valium in little blue diamond and sent it all over there.
I can always count on Russell for something, some vivid imagination.
Take
another Valium. God. But you know what's kind of scary is the Secretary of State. Now, he hasn't been on the job that long, so... He was on interviewing him last week, and he says, I had a phone call with the president, the guy we've been propping up for however many years, on like a Wednesday, and he said he was going to like fight to the end against the Taliban, the Afghani army that we have, essentially given a bunch of money to and everything. He said, and the Secretary of State goes, I talked to him yesterday. And I found out later that night that he left that night after telling me he was going to stay till the bitter end. And
I think they had him on TV and it was taped, and the reason it was taped is he was already out of the country.
Well, yeah, and then
they had him on TV in Afghanistan. I mean, he bailed, but you know what? He was the smart guy. He would be, you know, we left some helicopters behind. They've learned how to fly them, and they've been using them to hang people.
Hang people with a helicopter? Well, you
yep. They put them on. They put a noose around them, and then they take off and fly around for a few minutes, and then land.
I guess that would work.
It does work. So they, you know, one of the arguments was they're never going to be able to figure out how to use all the stuff that we left there. Well, they figured out. Not only did they figure out how to use it, but they figured out a use for it.
That might not be the high, you know, not really what it's designed for, but I guess it would work like that.
Yeah.
You mean a helicopter's not designed to hang people?
You think?
Whatever guy said, hey, I got an idea, that's the guy you don't need to be given Viagra to.
Well, so let me get this straight, man.
I know what we can do with these helicopters.
So you're saying that on the bottom where the where those things, what are the things called they land on? The runners or whatever? There's got to be a name for it that I don't know. Whatever they land on, are you saying that they should have like a bunch of notches there so you could easily attach the ropes, Maddie?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We don't want Maddie in the military. He's got too much.
You got to send a message to the people.
Oh,
God. I mean, if you saw some helicopter go by over Chicago and there were 12 people hanging from it.
Absolutely.
So what do you mean?
It's like the cartel in Mexico when they hang everyone from the bridges so everyone sees them.
I guess it's...
Apparently, I've been fact-checked on this, and it's not. They aren't actually hanging somebody. They've just got... They're doing something else there. But they were not using it to hang people.
Oh, right.
I hope I didn't just plant the seed.
It's going to go viral. All of a sudden, Russell Rhodes claims that they're hanging people by helicopter. Of course, maybe somebody did, or somebody got caught on there. So
it turns out, and I'm the first person to admit when I was wrong, it's a guy in a harness, and they were using the Black Hawk helicopter, so they didn't know how to fly that, but apparently he was, you know how... on the weekends, if they want to do work on one of the TV towers on top of the Willis Tower, you know, they may have a helicopter that goes up there. They were doing something like that.
I would be very, very reluctant to hop in a helicopter and fire it up with not knowing what I was doing. I'd be like real reluctant.
Oh, gosh, no.
Like you wouldn't get me to do that.
Yeah.
Ugh. But anyway, you wonder, I was early on, you know, I was asking Maddie about it. Allegedly, the Taliban communicated very effectively using social media, essentially doing all their threats. They didn't go town to town. They used social media, saying, if you mess with us, you're in deep trouble. And by the way, the other guys are going to bail. And the other guys did. I mean, couldn't we shut off their Twitter and Facebook? That's what they're. I mean, what are they using? You see these pictures?
We don't have control over that anymore.
Who does? Dorsey? Jack?
Twitter could do that, but, you know, I thought you were talking about overall control of the internet.
Well, but I mean, we can't. There's got to be a satellite that feeds Afghanistan. Why don't we take out the satellite? We surely be able to do that. I mean, I'm asking the question. I don't know. It just seems like, I mean, you see pictures of these people running around in a pickup truck and guns without a pot to piss in or any food, and yet they all have internet and they all have cell phones. I mean, how does that happen?
They all have their... What happens here?
Well, but I mean, hope that people...
Everybody has a phone, one way or another.
Yeah, but here we want people to communicate with each other. Over there, we really don't want the Taliban to communicate with each other, do we?
We would prefer that they not be able to.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff just kind of rings weird to me. Anyway, but let's not... So, if you're an investor, I mean, here's what I'm doing, Russell, and tell me what I'm doing right or wrong. I mean, you know, I run up, you know, protected stuff for people. So what I'm going to do is we were talking earlier about the VIX versus S&P puts. I mean, I put a lot of people's money to work 2 weeks ago, actually, when the market was down, we bought a lot of Q's, bought a lot of Russell. Okay, so say at the time, the Q's are 365, which they probably were, 367, somewhere in there. And if I'm going to protect it with puts, mm-hmm. I'm going to buy, say it's 367, I'm going to buy the 365s or 6s, because I'm nervous about this market, and I stay pretty snug with the protection. Well, now it runs up to 381, which is where it is right now. Now, I'm not going to sit there with these 366 puts, and because now the idea is if the market runs right back down at 366, I'm no better than anybody else. I mean, the idea is to keep your edge, but now your wealth is not at the 366 number; it's at the 381. So right. I've been very dutiful at rolling those puts up, or I'll buy, you know, the 378s. And sell the 366, which essentially locks in, you know, $12 profit minus what I paid for the put spread. I've been doing that very dutifully. Am I nuts? Are we going to be 481? And what am I doing here? just let the thing keep going, or am I right to do what I'm supposed to be doing here? And think one of these days we might actually stop going up, or is this forever?
You are right. You are right to continue doing what you're doing, because it doesn't go up forever. But on the other side of it, and you know, collectively you and I have about 100 years of market experience or so, right?
Yep.
The one thing I think we can both say is that when it's rare that somebody says we're going to get the big crash between mid-October and mid-November and times it perfectly, you know, and just times it absolutely perfectly. And typically when you first start to think that you need to hedge, if you're not normally hedging, it's too expensive at that time. So, you know, buying the puts while they're cheap and continuing to roll up and giving up a little bit of performance because you're going to save a lot of capital at some point is kind of the right thing to do, especially when that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, yeah, it is definitely what
I've been doing. As in you, that's what you personally, that's what you do.
Right. Well, I have a question. Let me know how far afield I am here, because I don't really want to be right to be the first time. Day one, when all this money started pouring in and so forth, and I've been kind of predicting this inflation, and I was early on the numbers anyway. I don't think I was at all early on the inflation. I mean, if you go back to 2000, the inflation started. 2007, it just started with a rampage. You start talking about, you know, your hospitalization and things like that, that of course nobody counted. We've been, and I'll say flat out, we've been being lied to for 20 years on these inflation numbers. Well, now it's starting to be so bad that it's even coming through the numbers. And from day one, Russell, I said the thing that's going to stop it is going to be a tipping point to where enough people are more pissed off about the inflation than they are about the happy that the market's going up. Because they're not the same people mm-hmm. that get wounded by inflation that benefit by the market going up, right? They're not the same group. And you already started to see it a little bit in a couple of the congressional people last time Powell was at Congress, saying the people in my district are getting eviscerated by this inflation. What are you talking about? There isn't any. Well, I wonder if this money, that the number that people are pointing towards, if somebody already knows that either is going to be a change in the way they balance some of the CPI or something. In my mind, I'm on record as saying we're going to get a 1.5 number 2 or 3 months in a row, and this whole house of cards that the Fed has been building is going to come tumbling down, because they're going to get so much pressure they're going to have to pull back, and when they do, we're going to see a problem. I wonder if somebody already has a feeling that the November CPI number is going to be a real outlier. That's the only thing I could see on the horizon, without elections or without mm-hmm. anything else, that could be so specific to the month of November that you'd be willing to say, I'll bet it's not October, and I'm betting it's November. Because otherwise, why would you? I can't think of anything else that would cause
you to do it. The trade you described has about a four-week window there where they're really expecting something bad to happen in that time frame.
Right. And I'm saying, I've been at this a long time, and when's the last time you thought that you not only knew the direction, but you knew a 4-week window was going to happen. I never have.
Oh, gosh. Never.
I mean, if you and I think bonds are too high, yeah,
especially for one of the big, you know, especially for one of the big downside moves like that. And one of the reasons that we get the big downside moves is because they surprise a lot of people.
Well, yeah, they do.
No, really. If you think, yeah. it actually, one of the really big endowment guys said this in a meeting I was in a couple of years ago when we could all meet in person. He continuously had a safety net against a 5% drop in the equity market. Anything beyond a 5% drop in the equity market, he was protecting the equity portion, the stock portion of his endowment. And he said, and because I've got this protection on, it doesn't really bother me to put new money to work and buy stocks because I'm also, you know, hedged. You know, that's how you want to approach the markets if you want to be prepared for the downside. And it's a really smart school. It's one of the schools you went to that I'm talking about right now. And
yeah,
and you would think that they would know what they're talking about with respect to the best way to go about approaching the financial market.
Well, Russell, when I started, and I've probably told you the story before, you know, the interest rate was 12 to 15%. I mean, you could get 15 at Continental Bank on the top, like a 1-year CD. It was pretty obvious to me that trade had to go the other way. I mean, at some point here, that was not a long. I mean, we weren't going to be 100 years later and interest rates still be 15% and the country looking anything like you and I ever thought it was supposed to look like, right? Well, right now, I mean, I don't think I've this to me is the mirror image of that on steroids. I mean, right now, if you take the admitted 5 or 6% interest rate coming out of the Fed, and you look at the 10-year rate, you're talking about a -5, -6% real rate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that is just not a trade that anybody with an IQ over 4 is ever going to do. The only people buying bonds at that level is our Fed, and people front running them. Nobody you know. There might be some insurance company somewhere that has it buried maybe University of Indiana, I don't know, or University of Notre Dame, maybe buried in their charter and their endowment. There says you got to be 20% 10-year treasuries, like no matter what. I guess the no matter what part says they have to buy them. So there's probably some demand for it. In Europe, there's probably some demand for negative, because somebody somewhere, some union or some university says you got to buy a certain amount of government securities. There's probably some locked in demand that, you know, they can't get rid of. But by and large, you would never make that. There isn't anybody in the world that would give some money, give somebody $100, and at the end of the year expect the worth of $95 back. I pity the fool, is what's his name, Mr. T would say. It's just not a trade that's sustainable. Now, I don't think so. Something here has got to change, but I could never tell you when. I mean, I just say it's 10 years from now. This won't be the situation. Is all I can tell you, right?
Well, it will not be the situation. Well, it sounds like one guy thinks it's all going to change between mid-October and mid-November.
Yeah, and I'm racking my brain as to what he's seeing.
I kind of am, too. I started digging through economic numbers and a bunch of other stuff, and then I had to start talking to you, so, and I can't talk and type at the same time.
Well, I can't. I don't feel so bad.
My work.
I don't feel so puzzled if you're puzzled, too. I feel better about it now, actually.
Oh, I'm puzzled, but I've only been thinking about it for just over an hour.
Well, the best I come up with is a CPI number. Maybe you can do better by next week.
I'm going to do my very best. Actually, I have a virtual happy hour with some other volatility folks, and I might get some insight this afternoon. And if I do, I will probably shoot you an email.
Why don't you just call in?
I could call in tomorrow morning if you want as well.
Well, if you
I don't want to, I don't want to bump up against other people's time.
Well, what you could do is say to these guys tonight, "Hey, did you guys hear about this trade the other day? What do you think?" I bet they haven't.
That's exactly the kind of thing that we do.
Which do you find...
Did you see this? What do you think's behind it? Well, I'm hearing this.
Which do you find more illuminating? I find the November-October spread more illuminating than the straight buy.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
That's a... So you see a lot of
time... my job at SIBO was to highlight the really large block trades for like 10 years.
Really? Okay.
That's what I did. I would... If this had happened and I was still there when this happened last week, I immediately would have been writing something up about it and formulating some ideas behind it. And this whole idea of leaving yourself open to some trouble in October, so that you've got some good exposure in December, that would worry me a bit. But you know, you're talking about short the 55 calls,
yeah,
and long the 20 strike calls. If VIX gets up to, VIX would have to get up to 65 to pull
the first
pull
spread.
October futures up with them.
No, the first spread was buy the 85s in November, sell the 55s in October. Then the other one was a week later was a straight buy of the 20s. All right, we got a dash, Russell. Talk at you next week, if not sooner, buddy. Alrighty. Have a good time tonight. S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 52. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.